The Shemitah, the mystery of the Shemitah. Let's get some dates from Jonathan so we can predict what we're going to do next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jonathan Kahn as well. We'll get to your calls in a second. Jonathan, so let's pull out the old calendar. What do we have here? What do you see as... Now, does the Shemitah tell you what the event is, or does it only give you dates of certain things?
For instance, the last two Shemitahs, you have exact dates and you have exact events. In fact, the events are really parallels of each other. In many cases, they are this financial collapse. But for instance, in 9/11, you have the event being caused by a non-financial event, but by this terrorist cataclysm. So, you know, the general overall is that of, you know, of collapse, of change, of, I mean, there's several characteristics of the form the Shemitah may take. I have a few pages on that. It can, you know, in the book, it can go a few ways, but I believe we're talking about a collapse in several ways of what's coming for this particular one. And now I do want to give you one caution. Again, I don't want to put God in a box, and I don't, say that something has to happen at this time. There are times when certain things do not manifest on the Shemitah, and then it does the next one. But again, it has been increasing. So I will tell you what the dates are. I'll tell you also what I think is going to happen to begin with.
The date
of the Shemitah, the beginning of the Shemitah, is September. This is now. It's September 25th. That is the first day of the Shemitah.
Okay.
Easy for me to remember because it happens to be my birthday this year. So, you know,
happy upcoming birthday, John.
Yes. And it actually begins the night, you know, every biblical day begins the night before. So it starts the 24th and sundown goes to, you know, then starts on. Now, one of the patterns is that generally the big change, if something is going to happen in this Shemitah, it doesn't have to, but if it is, it generally does not manifest at the beginning, but manifests towards the end, just like in the last two cases. In the case of 2007, when it began, that's when the Shemitah began, it went to 2008. Within 1 month of the beginning, the stock market that had been rising for years starts turning and going down. Now, if you weren't really attuned to it, you might miss it, and yet that was going to end up in the biggest collapse, you know, since the Depression. But you had the shifting of momentum, and the last two Shemitahs, you would not have noticed it necessarily, but things did shift. But then another date you have is the very center point of the Shemitah, which is going to be a solar eclipse, and that is March 20th. That is the exact center point, and you have this solar eclipse. But if something is going to happen in this period, that it's most likely going to be towards the end of the Shemitah, because that's when the Shemitah reaches its climax, always. And so what we're talking about is September of 2015, or the autumn of 2015. Now, in the last collapse, in the Great Recession, in 2008, things started increasing as you headed towards September. You know, you had the collapse of Fannie Mae,
right,
and Freddie Mac, and
you see
Lehman
it coming,
Brothers.
Right?
You could see it coming in 2008. Now in 2001, you know, the economy was already in a slide, or the stock market was in a slide, but you probably wouldn't have seen 9/11 coming unless you looked at some other biblical things. That's the harbingers. But so, you know, there's variation. But then the final, the climactic day, you know, which if it happens at that time, is Elul 29 of 2015, which in English is September 13th, 2015. Now, one of the things is that you know, sometimes when you've had collapses in the past, they've happened, or you've had traumatic events, they've happened in that period, sometimes just before it, and sometimes just after it. In the month of Tishri is often a month of cataclysm, because that's the one that follows it. But in the last two, you had it exactly on that day. So now, the interesting thing, George, you know, if there is something, is that it's going to be, this time it's going to be, it happens on a Sunday, so you cannot have a stock market crash in America. But at the same time, you know, as with 9/11, that may point to having another cataclysmic thing that is beyond the stock market, but then affects it. The last day that the stock market will be open before this Elul 29 day will be Friday, September 11th, the anniversary of September 11th.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that, you know, that I said that you have this solar eclipse happening on this exact biblical day, Elul 29. Well, the last time that happened, and this is you know, this is not speculation, and I've had financial people come to me about these things. The last time you had the solar eclipse on Elul 29, the day of nullification of the Shemitah, it led to Black Monday, which it was 1987 when you had the greatest percentage collapse in American history. Another time when you had it just about that time, eclipse was 1931. And it was just within that day or two, and you had the greatest month-long collapse. It was the Great Depression. So, now again, not saying it has to happen, but that those are the key time periods. Now, I do believe, and I will say this, whenever it happens, whether it happens in this period or not, I do believe, I feel, sense very strongly for many reasons, there is going to be a great shaking in America and the world, and it will affect the financial realm, it will affect the economic realm, it may not be limited to those realms, there may be another event connected to it, but I believe it's going to be a great shaking, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the Shemitah. I'm very cautious, but at the same time, as I give the dates and charts and other things too, but I do believe we do need to be ready, and we do need to be prepared.
Now, when you say shaking, could that be an earthquake?
You know what? A shaking can take that as well. And I think one time when you and I were talking, we were talking about how does shaking or how does judgment or warnings come? And one way they can come is exactly that. It can be a natural disaster. It can be a man-made disaster, as in terrorism, as we watched. It can be, of course, economic. I believe that either way, that economic and financial will be involved, but I don't believe it necessarily will be limited to that. And one of the things, you know, combined with this is that the harbingers are progressing and continuing. You know, last time we spoke, I mentioned to you about that tree, that seventh harbinger was called the Erez tree, the tree that they planted at Ground Zero. And one of the signs in the Bible of the warning, because this was a symbol of America, is the withering away of a tree. Well, that tree was withering away, and since I last spoke to you, that tree, the seventh harbinger, has been destroyed. They destroyed the tree because they could not save it. It's destroyed, and they destroyed it on a Hebrew holiday of all things. So all these things keep going. I just heard the president talk. I was actually in the Capitol building the night when the president was speaking, when he spoke, and here is the eve of 9/11, and he's speaking about ISIS, and when he speaks, he specifically mentions the last two shakings of America that are really part of the Harbinger and part of the Shemitah. He says this is the 13th anniversary of course, 9/11. That's the first shaking. And then he says, and then we're coming to the anniversary, well, he says the sixth anniversary, which means we're only 1 year away from the seventh there, of the economic collapse. You know, and these are, you know, when you look, and you know, between the two, between 9/11 and that first shaking, and then the shaking of our economy, it's a seven-year cycle, and it's the Shemitah, and the president, without realizing it, he alludes to it. And one of the other mysteries that begins in the Harbinger, but I believe is linked to this, is that the when Israel got its warning and its shaking, and then came ultimately judgment, the judgment came, or the great calamity came, through the same people who brought the first shaking. In other words, it was an attack of terror, and it had to do with literally Iraq, literally the land of Iraq. And Israel got involved with the shaking came from Iraq, and then they got involved with a second war with Iraq, or with these who really the beginnings of terrorism, and that's when the final thing, or that's when the great judgment came. So it's a little bit ominous is all happening. It's all also happening, you know, the anniversary of 9/11, and that the president also alludes to these things. And one of the things that we, you know, saw with the principle of the Harbinger is and the Shemitah is that weirdly or eerily you have these leaders, you know, reenacting these things without and saying these things without realizing what they're saying.
All right. Now, if I'm hearing you right, September 25th of this year all the way through September 13th of next year, we've got that window. But you think that if anything happens, it's going to be closer to the September 11, 12, 13 date of next year, correct?
That is correct. I believe if something is to be for this one, it will be, the pattern will be towards the end, and the final end is September 13th. And it often, when in the past, has carried into that month period of Tishri, which follows that September 13th.
So are we going to have a boom year this year?
Well, not well. Here's George. Here's the pattern. You know, not necessarily. There can be, but what in the last Shemitah, you had this boom. You know, which happened. You know, began with the fall of the Shemitah before it,
right.
And it went a little bit past the beginning of the Shemitah, and it was within 30 days when it started turning, when the stock market started turning, and then by the end of that year, you had the you know crescendo of all this. So it is possible that it could continue, you know, but it also is possible that you could start, you could see in the last two, you'd see the beginning of a shift of a momentum. But then the dramatic thing happens at the end, at least in the last two.
All right, let's take some calls for you. We've got Donna in Riverside, California to get things started. Hey, Donna, go ahead.
Hallelujah. Thank you.
Sure.
I heard just three quick things. I heard Jesus was crucified on the Shemitah. And what do you think of the Bible code theory? And would it also give links to the end times? And one last thing is I heard a man a few years ago who was related to somebody in the New World Order said they were planning indentured servitude. And given the maniacal tendencies of some of these leaders, do you think that's possible? Thank you, and God bless you for your work.
Thank you. Wow. Okay. I've heard, you know, there are those who speculated that it was that Jesus was crucified on the Shemitah. We do, you know, we can't tell when the Shemitah. We do know that there was a Shemitah year just before the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, and you can count backwards, and it kind of depends when the dating for the crucifixion. It could be 30 AD, 33 AD, somewhere around there. So it would depend on that. As far as, you know, what this, there's something, Jordan didn't even mention, it's in the epilogue of the book, and it's linked to the end times, because the Shemitah also continuously through the Bible and onward in prophecy contains really the secret of the timing of things. And in fact, you know, you talk about the 7-year tribulation. Well, that's a 7-year period. That's a Shemitah. But one of the mysteries that also is converging in this coming year is in the book, it's called The Mystery of the Seventh Shemitah. And when you got to the seventh Shemitah, or seven sevens, that's 49 years, that would lead into the Jubilee. And the Jubilee is linked to the Shemitah. I mean, you can't have it without it. In fact, the Jubilee is like a super Shemitah. You know, it's a time where everything is restored, very positive, and people return to their ancestral possession. They return home, they get with a lost land, they get it restored. Well, the Jubilee always has to happen after a year of the Shemitah, because you got 49, you got the seventh Shemitah, and then you get the 50th year. So it's always going to be in the year after the Shemitah. What does that have to do with prophecy or end times? Well, here's the thing. Was there the key moment in end time prophecy? The restoration of Israel as was predicted, and the first time that the Jewish people were restored to the land, or the land was given to them, it was called the Balfour Declaration. It was at the end of World War I, and it was 1917. Well, if you look at that the time when that happened, it was in the year following the Shemitah. That has to be the year of restoration. So you have this Jubilee, you have this restoration of the land, and you have all this thing of the Jubilee. Well, now what happens if you count seven Shemitahs from that restoration, from that kind of prophetic Jubilee? If you count seven Shemitahs from around 1917, It takes you to 1966, September 1966. The year after is September 1966 to September 1967. Did anything happen significantly? Well, that's when you have the other restoration, the restoration of Jerusalem, the Six-Day War, which is another prophetic key. So you've got this thing following the same exact pattern, exactly 50 years in this whole thing. But here's the other part of it, and again, I'm not saying it has to be, but if you follow from that last one and you go seven Shemitahs forward, or the seven sevens, where does it take you? It takes you to the Shemitah of 2014 and 2015, where we are coming to, and the next year would then be that. So if that would be the Jubilee. So if that follows, it could mean there could be something very significant happening linked to the Middle East as well. And the pattern is actually it always happens through war and a major prophetic event. So I'm just throwing this in. It's one of the things, the seventh Shemitah, that's also part of the Shemitah, the mystery of what's coming.
Let's go to Anthony in Philadelphia. Get you in here, Anthony. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, yes. Hi. The last show you had this gentleman who was a seer, and he predicted all these things happening. Now you have a show where you know, you got the Shemitah is lining up with everything throughout the years.
That's
it's
right.
Lining up perfectly. Well, but then your gentleman says it doesn't have to be, and the gentleman on the show yesterday said that it doesn't have to happen if man can turn everything around. But it just seems to me that man cannot be dependent upon to turn everything around, because if he could, he would, and you would not have all these things happening constantly lining up with one another, and there would not be an end of times then. It just seems to me that man cannot be dependent upon to turn things around, because he is basically a defective species that is always going to screw things up, basically. Which is
you may be right there, Anthony. Man does screw things up a lot. So, Jonathan, when you look at all of this, maybe he's right. Maybe we can't change it because we're not capable of changing it.
Well, you've got the mystery of free will and predestination, and they go together. You know, ultimately you have prophecies that I believe are going to come true, and at the same time you have here this really, you know, precise pattern. I believe because we are messed up, you know, and I agree, that will most likely lead to these things happening. My feeling is that it could very well be in this timing, but I'm always just cautious to step back to say, again, I don't want to put God in a box. That's only, but I do believe, again, as I stated, and I'm cautious about it, but I clearly believe there is a very great shaking coming.
Well, a big shaking indeed. Jonathan, we're going to watch. We're going to watch the calendar. We're going to come back in a moment and take final calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, our colleagues, of course, will be filling in for me. I do believe we have Richard Surrett tomorrow from Toronto. I've got some personal family business, which you're all aware of, that I must tend to. I will be back Monday in Los Angeles, and the team will keep things going. We'll be back in a moment with our guest, Jonathan Kahn, as we talk about the mystery of the Shemitah on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jonathan Kahn with us, of course. Jonathan, if people want to pick up the book, The Mystery of the Shemitah, where do they go?
The book just came out last week, and so it is everywhere from Amazon to Walmart to Barnes & Noble, really everywhere, you know, where books are sold. I was just told it's kind of like the third book in Amazon. It's the third book in the world, third highest book. So it just went out, and this is really one of the first interviews I'm doing. So.
Well, good. You're doing a great job. Let's go back to the phones. Bob is in Maui in Hawaii. Bob, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Well, George, can you hear me?
I sure
can. Aloha.
Yeah, you too.
Well, anyway, here I am. It's been about a year since I talked to you last time. I guess it was when Walter Christensen came over here, and I took him up to see the petroglyphs and
within a half
a mile of where I live. You know, I have an estate up here. But anyway, the reason I called, I think you have I haven't called for a while because, you know, I won't go into that. But I think what you have is a guy on today that really knows what he's doing, Jonathan. He's really a smart man. Today is my birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, no, I'm not sure. It's 9/11, you know, and so that's a hard one for me. Anyway, I'm going to be my next birthday, I'll be 80 years old. Do I sound like that? No. I'm a lucky man, right, Jonathan and George?
You sure are.
Yep.
Yes, and I think a lot of it has to do with living over here. But here's the thing I wanted to direct to George, and I did talk a little bit to your screener, and he's a great guy. Of course, I've talked to him before. Now, here's the thing. We're worried so much about these EMPs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we use an EMP on the ISIS guys, for God's sake? Why? You know, in the old days, the old days, like 1,000 years ago, we used to set up a perimeter around a camp that we were trying to take or a castle, and we would just starve them out.
Well, let me explain that, Bob, and then I want to concentrate on Jonathan because we don't have a lot of time here. An EMP will not physically hurt somebody. It only takes out electrical grids and power systems and things like that. And the ISIS folks, they're probably running around without the need for that. So that would not work. But back to you, Jonathan, and this incredible work of the Shemitah. What's behind it? Is it prophecy? Is it God? What's fueling it?
Yeah, I think I would think, first of all, it's all the above. It was given initially in from Mount Sinai, literally through Moses. So this was a pattern, a law that was given. It's a pattern. It is something that operates in the supernatural and the natural. I mean, because it's just too much to be explained by anything. And given the right circumstances, it becomes, as I said, it becomes a sign, or can become a sign of warning and judgment. It is ultimately, if you talk to the rabbis, they'll say, you know, the Shemitah was showing that really God is in charge of everything, you know, and he owns everything. So it was originally going to be, again, a blessing, turn away from the worldly things and turn back to God. It was it was a Sabbath. But again, that's where, in this case, it becomes a sign of judgment, and that's where it gets a bit scary. So, and the thing is, we're talking about a 3,500-year-old thing that is affecting things to this day. And I want to just throw in, because we've had a few things people along these lines saying this, that is that, you know, regardless of what has to be, that doesn't say how each of us have to be. In other words, you know, you can have things happening around you, but how you respond makes a difference. You know, there's a verse that says, you know, calamity comes, but the wise person prepares for it. And that's really the reason I wrote the book. And, you know, and the same with the Harbinger, it's sounding an alarm, but so that we can get ready. People say, is there hope? Well, if there was no hope, there'd be no warning. What's the point of warning if there's no hope? So it's really how we respond to it, and us getting right and getting ready and getting prepared and right with God. And so that's really the whole point of all of it. And so you don't have to fear, but you have to be right.
Okay, let's go next to Anita in New York. Hey, Anita, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good morning, gentlemen. Such a fascinating show. So, George, I need to alert you to an important email. The last part of the subject line says a new marketing idea. Those of us in the tri-state area can only tune in, and sometimes not after 3:30. So, you know, I'm missing.
Well, that's going to change in another month or so when baseball is over. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, but I'd like to hear the Saturday program. I heard Lisa once. If you could get a phone number, like many shows have, and I would pay to subscribe. So that's something. Please send to my email, and I will try to follow up. But getting to Jonathan, I have a three-part question. The first part is a point of clarification since I tuned in so late. Spell Smita, and let me ask the full thing, and I'll listen over the air. The second part is I'd like to know if he hadn't talked about the genesis of his work. It certainly intriguing, and I'll say that, and then I want to comment and hear his reflections. It seems to be corroborated by Webster Tarpley's work, who wrote 9/11 Synthetic Terror, and he said that on that day, 9/11, that the corporate debt went to zero. Now, in, contrary to that, though, it seems that using the Bible and the Hebrews, it seems to go against the grain in the respect that the settlement of Israel under Zionism was with European Jews of the Caspian Black Sea area, who are also known as the Khazars, and so that's not the same thing as the original Hebrews. And if you understand, Jonathan, my question, my concern, I'll listen over the air for your response. And thank you, George.
Okay, you're welcome, Anita. Go ahead, John.
First of all, the Shemitah, the way it's spelled in the book, and you see, because it's Hebrew, so you have a few ways of putting it, transliterating it into English. But the way it's spelled is S-H-E-M, Shem, and then I-T-A-H, Shemitah. And then that's the second thing is that the genesis of it was really, it was when the economy collapsed. This was first begun in the Harbinger, where there's one chapter on it. But that speaks about what happened after 9/11, which is dramatic. But at that moment, I had a sense, but I didn't know for sure, that this thing was bigger and actually extended before that and has been affecting everything. So that those revelations really came only in the last few months. And that's why this thing came out as just suddenly as it did. So as far as Israel, the Khazar kingdom, was a kind of an anomaly in history, but the Jewish people are still the Jewish people. But regardless, clearly the prophetic center point of history, no matter who you think who anyone is Jerusalem, is Israel and Jerusalem, and that follows the exact pattern of the Shemitah as well.
Does the Shemitah tie into any of our presidential elections coming up in 16, Jonathan?
The interesting thing is that in all these mysteries, in the Harbinger of the Shemitah, there's always the leaders have been integral to it. They're the ones who are saying these, pronouncing judgment, saying these ancient things and doing all these things. I believe it's part of the picture. And interesting, when Obama was reelected in his inaugural, he had a poet, give a kind of, a praise or something. And what he mentioned in that inaugural was the Harbinger. He spoke of the tower going up and a symbol of our resilience, which is just, it totally paraphrases Isaiah 9:10 and the Harbinger thing. So there is this thing going on. So not to say that it's going to determine who's going to tell us who's going to be elected, but the leaders are crucial in this mystery.
Okay, let's take some final calls here. Tom is in Greenfield, Indiana now. Tom, go ahead.
George, thank you very much. Long-time listener.
Thank you.
Jonathan, pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
My first trip in Jerusalem, I was unpacking my bag September the 22nd, 1987, and somebody said, here comes the opening music of the festival celebrating the rebirth of Babylon. Wow. 2 days later, I'm on the Temple Mount underneath the Dome of the Winds, and you know what the Dome of the Winds is all about. Let's do the Golden Gate. So, very serious individual. Just an article about the call of the Temple, a book. I'm a big fan of BAR magazine, etc. But in 1956, a gentleman named David Noel Friedman did a book on the Babylonian Chronicles, British Museum. Ironically, they got the Babylonian tablets underneath the gates of Ishtar in 1907, 300 tablets, and conclusively the city fell in August of 587. It's 13 pages. That's why I bring it to your attention. I probably got 50 books with title Jerusalem in it. And that 86-87 date, if you read all the books lately, about the last 50 years, that date switched. I didn't know why, and I was fortunate enough to find a book. Anyway, The Babylonian Chronicle by David Noel Friedman, 1956, published. I'll give you the name of the book because you're a serious student. The Biblical Archaeological Reader, published by Quadrangle Books in Chicago, 1961. Conclusive. It's a heck of a book, very studious, but those records really prove it. 587 was the year. Anyway, on the Shemitah, obviously it's seven times 60, 360. All the proof that the period of time was 2,520 days for centuries. And, of course, since we've gone to 365-day calendar, you have the VADAR added to months. My question is the compensation factor, because it's always been at 520 days. Flinders Peak, as you know, proved that the 25.20 is the sacred cubit, the secret to everything. I'm sure you're aware of what I'm talking about. That 2520 versus, for example, 2564 days between 2008 and 2015, and I think it's 2560 days rather than 2520. The compensation, do the rabbis keep a separate books on the 360, but they compensate the Shemitah to keep them accurate enough? But what happens to the dates? Because for 2,000 years was always matching up the 360 day year, which, of course, was 2,520 days, which is the secret to everything. So, important deal. Count them very carefully. Very much aware of things that I've got secrets revealed to me that I would prefer to maybe contact you personally some other time. It's a magnificent thing. Seven goes in everything. I divided six-digit calculated numbers on events going back to the 6th century. This century events, 518 BC. It's funny, 69 years in our calendars, 2,501 days, it's 7 years in the old Bible. So 69 years of ours are there. So 518 matches up to, 1967. And I know all about the war. And I've got 50 titles with Jerusalem, my favorite books, Old Jerusalem. Love Jerusalem. Love the effort. Love your work. And, the thing about the dates.
All right. Well, let's see if you want to react to that, Jonathan, before the clock gets us here.
Well, yeah. Thank you. There is a link between the Hebrew calendar and the Babylonian calendar. Even the month of Tishri is linked to Tishru in the Babylonian. But what happens is, for those who don't know, it's basically a lunar calendar, but then it gets compensated according to the solar to keep it on track with a leap month. So it is very established when the Shemitahs will come, really from now to, 1,000 years.
Let's go to Sam in Virginia Beach. He's been holding for a while. Sam, go ahead.
Yes, please. The mystery of the Shemitah started with Joseph or Yusuf, the prophet, the son of Jacob, the brother of the 12, when he's thrown in the well and then taken to Egypt, and he was imprisoned. And after that, the king had a dream of seven fatty cows. Yes?
Yes. There's a link there, and that is that the very first mentioning of a 7 year has to do with the economy. It has to do with famine and with abundance, and it's exactly that. You have 7 years of abundance, and you have 7 years of famine. So you had a warning to prepare. So yes, the pattern is there from ancient times, and it's still determining our lives.
The rise and fall of nations. Where does the United States fit in with the rise or the fall?
I believe that the warning here is that if we do not get it right, if we do not return, that we will watch the end of the American age as we know it. And the prosperity, because one of the things about the Shemitah is saying that all the blessings we have are not from ourselves. And if we turn from our source, if we turn from God, they'll be removed. And we are watching a nation in free fall. And that is the warning. And I believe if we do not turn back, we're going to witness that change. And that's what the Shemitah brings.
Let's go to Carol in St. John's, Florida. Go ahead.
Hi there. My question, I have two questions, and you almost sort of talked about it just now. Why is all this Shemitah stuff seems to be related to the United States specifically? And then the second part is, you talked about studying it back through, like, the beginning of World War One. Have you traced it back to events prior to that?
Yeah, it actually, when you look at the crashes and you say you go back even to the 19th century, it still follows the pattern. And as far as the America, this has affected the whole world. I mean, and the depression and the stock markets and the cataclysm affect the entire world. However, America's right now been in the center of history, so I think that's one reason. And the other reason is that America was actually founded after the pattern of Israel. The Puritans founded it to be in Israel, and they actually foretold that if we follow God, we'll be the most blessed nation. If we turn away from God, the judgments that came on Israel will come upon us. They said that. That's the Shemitah.
Well, a few more moments to go. 1 minute to go, Jonathan. The clock is ticking. September 25th of this year through September 13th of 2015. But can something happen economically, let's say, on the 25th of this year, this month?
It could. In the case of the Shemitah of 1937, the day the Shemitah began, the next day everything crashed. So it could. My sense is if something does, it's going to be more subtle than what happens at the end.
And this prediction of at the end, is that based on your interpretation or is there something else there?
It's based on two things. One is it's the actual history. It's continuous. And the second thing is that actually in the pattern from the Bible, it is the end that is the crescendo when you have the day of nullification.
All right, my friend. Be well, Jonathan. Let's keep in touch. Say hi to Joe Farah for me, will you?
Thanks so much, George. You too. Thanks so much.
All right. Jonathan Kahn. The name of the book, The Mystery of the Shemitah. Write down those dates. September 25th of this year through September 13th of 2015. There's that window. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safer.